says, perhaps it's you, five listeners. BD Wong, I know you're out there. Your favorite Unsolved Mysteries rewatch podcast. Yeah, that's what it is.
I feel like we're yelling at them.
What?
Unsolved Mysteries.
This is Unsolved Mysteries. Listen up. Well, we're going to be taking a little hiatus. This is going to be our last episode for a minute. I'm actually like a little bit sad about it.
It's our last new episode. We do have some vault content. So you can count on that. Or go to Patreon because we just recorded some fantastic Patreon content. If I do say so myself.
If you want to hear us watch Beyond Belief, which I know you do because those are so good. We've pre-recorded some Patreon episodes that will be coming out in the next couple of months while we're on our hiatus for August and September. In connection to that, I want to say that I am extending the deadline for the next zine, which is good because you're all our slackers anyway. So you have until the end of the hiatus to send things in for the zine. And you should do it because then you get a free copy of the zine. So really, you're like saving money.
Yeah.
And
spend the time, you know, you're sitting around waiting for us to come back.
Yes,
that'd be your creative project for the zine.
That's when you should make something for the zine. So what could that be? Well, first of all, if you have no idea what I'm talking about, a zine is just like a little handmade booklet of all the different things our listeners and probably me and Samantha will make something. It's like a collaborative little booklet that we make together. We've made two before. They're really fun. So what could you send in? You could send in a recipe.
A poem.
A craft project. You could write which mystery you would most want solved and why.
Ooh. Write a Robert Stack fan fiction.
Yeah, but not too dirty. It could be like a tiniest bit dirty.
A little bit, like a fade to black.
yeah, exactly. I don't want it to disgust me in any way. So keep that in mind. Keep it pretty much safe for work. We've had people send in like crossword puzzles. You could do a word search. You could do
a recipe.
Cocktail recipe. You could do, if you have a kid, you could have your kid draw something for us. Like ask your kid, what do you think an alien looks like? And then have the kid draw that and send that in. Or like, where would you most like to see Mothman? You could draw that and send that in. Where would you most like to encounter Mothman? And then you could draw out your ideal Mothman encounter.
Love this.
And then send that in. Preferably in black and white. Most of the zines are going to be in black and white. And we need you to send that to perhaps@gmail.com. So ask your kid, like, what does the lake monster in Nokomis look like? What does a ghost look like? And then have your kid draw up that for us. Send that in. We would love to include that. That would be so cool.
Get creative. I can't wait to see your ideas.
Yes, we've had some really cool stuff in the past. I think maybe we've tapped everybody's creative potential a little too much. But no, you've got to go into the reservoir. You've got to find it and find more stuff to send us so we can make another scene.
Oh, maybe this is just because I have Beyond Belief factor fiction on the brain, but what if you wrote a little short story and then it was like a Beyond Belief style where you have to guess and it's at the end of the zine or whatever whether or not it's factor fiction.
I'd love that. Please do that. Yeah, almost like a choose your own adventure story of whether it's fact or fiction. That would be so good.
There could be like, you know, each one could be just like a paragraph or two, and maybe like, I don't know, two of them are fact and one of them is fiction, and you can go find some crazy story out on the internet and that'd be really fun.
You don't even really need to back up your sources of whether something is true. Beyond Belief sure didn't. Yeah. So
it's just fact, fiction.
Yeah,
fiction,
that's fact. It. If you wanted to draw like a little comic, I'm thinking right now off the top of my head, like the day Robert Stack got his first trench coat. If you could make a little comic of that for us.
It would be a toddler. I feel like it would have to be like the day
he comes out of the womb.
Look, that's what he went home from the hospital in.
That's up for the artist to decide.
Okay.
You do not have to be great at drawing to do that. You can, you know, doodles are perfectly acceptable for comics.
Absolutely.
So we would love that. Okay. Also, the other thing I wanted to say is that one of the Patreon episodes we recorded, but it won't be out for a couple months now, was sponsored by Bumbling Fools Mead, which is a local mead maker that very nicely dropped off some mead for us. And that's all it takes to sponsor an episode of the Patreon. If you are a local business that has food or beverages and you want us to try them on the show for Snacks with Stack, get in touch.
Please get in touch. Or even not local, send us something.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. That would work too. I'm actually right now having some, you're not here to have it with me, but I'm having some of the Featherweight mead, which has hibiscus and ginger.
Okay, that sounds delicious.
Lovely. It's very refreshing. This was actually the first time Samantha had mead. Baby's I'd never first tried mead.
It before, and I really liked it. You could really taste the honey. I thought the bottle was super cute. Like, I mean, obviously get one for yourself, but then maybe also get a second one for a gift, because I think it's like perfect. It's just, it's different than wine. You know, people give wine all the time, but
that's true.
Beautiful and delicious.
And I appreciate that they dropped us off at the acupuncture clinic that is our P.O. box. And they brought extra mead for the acupuncturist. That's how it works. That's how it works, everyone.
Liz probably should have given them a heads up that this delivery was coming. But you know what? Free mead just showing up at your door is not the worst thing to happen in your day, I'm sure.
I responded to the email with like, look, you're in luck. I love mead. Drop it off here. They take our mail. Just bring extra for the acupuncturist. And I didn't realize they would be so fucking on the ball that they did it like the next day. So I hadn't warned the acupuncturist, and I just get a text that's like, mead arrived and some is for me. And I was like, yep, that's everything's in order. Don't worry.
Amazing. What a weird life.
I love.
Although I do love it. And the mead was legitimately delicious. So it's all great.
This podcast only takes us down like the weirdest paths, but they're all like pleasant weird for the most part. There's been a couple duds.
Look, but... there's been a few turns and, you know, bends in the road, whatever, but free mead is definitely up there free with mead. The good ones.
It's not something I knew that I wanted, but I did. And now I demand it, in fact. Send us more stuff. Also, so Samantha, the reason we're having a hiatus is because Samantha has to go back to prison she violated her parole for robbing that Chuck E. Cheese. And while she's in prison, she's also having back surgery. So I did convince her to make an Amazon wish list of books she wants to read while she's recovering. So if you're in our Facebook group, you can see the wish list there. If you're not in the Facebook group and you want it, just email me and I'll send you the list. Okay. If you want to spoil
a link in the show notes or something.
Yeah. Please do. Because the listeners already have been very generous and have been sending you stuff. Freaks.
You guys are the best.
Yeah. I'm not surprised because I know that you are all sweeties. You're all sweetie pies. So if you want to spoil Samantha, that is something you could do because she's going to be, you know, laying around on her fainting couch per usual.
You mean my jail cell, my cot in my jail cell?
Yeah, exactly. You're going to be in prison, very bored. So that's something the listeners can do for you. It's a nice little gesture if they feel so inclined.
Yes, and thank you to the listeners that sent me something. I loved getting those. What a nice surprise in the mail.
The only reason we keep doing this is because we have the best listeners. Like sometimes I hear other podcasters or I see other podcasters talking about how they never really hear from their listeners. And I was kind of like, I would not do it then.
We have a giant shadow box in Liz's kitchen with stuff that listeners have sent us.
Yeah. So, and people come over and they're kind of like, I'm sorry, what?
It's huge. I don't know. I feel like if you're picturing a shadow box, you might picture like kind of something small. It's very large. It's and
very
full.
Large.
It's so full, in fact, that not everything fits in there.
I had to add a shelf and not everything fits on the shelf anymore. Like, if you're listening to this, this may be hard to believe, but there are people who know me that do not listen to the podcast. And you know what? We'll forgive them in their own time. But then they come over and they're sort of surprised that other people listen because they don't. You know, they're like, oh, people in like Australia.
My own husband was like, so someone that listens to your podcast sent you a book? I'm like, yeah, I have fans. I realize you don't listen to this show. I realize you don't listen to my very popular podcast. But yeah, I have fans.
That's right, Travis.
Thank
we're
you
actually
very much.
In the top 1% of podcasts in the entire world. Thank you. So yes, we do have fans and we do hear from them and they're all actually really great people. So that's the only reason that we keep doing it. Otherwise, we would have quit this after 10 episodes, like every sensible person did.
I think that might sound like hyperbole, but it's actually 100% true. We would not be doing that.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%.
If people weren't so nice and didn't like routinely demonstrate how much they like listening to us.
Because also I think that like that little voice in our heads would win and we would be like, nobody's listening. This is stupid. It's probably all bots. And we would have quit. You know what I mean? Like
every single it would have taken 10 seconds for me to convince myself that no one likes this podcast.
Nobody likes it. We're stupid. This is stupid. Let's just pretend we never did this and never bring it up. And sometimes go like, remember when we used to podcast? And I'd be like, what podcast? What are you talking about?
I don't know what you're talking. What is a podcast? I don't know.
I don't know. I've never heard of one. Though the other day I was watching, though even though I've said that I don't understand the point of having a video of a podcast and we'll never have a video of this podcast ever, I was watching a video of Harrison Ford on Conan O'Brien's podcast. But that's different because he's fucking Harrison Ford.
You want to see Harrison? Yes.
But they, and I was like, damn, that is a really nice setup. Conan, oh, it's like, oh, well, it's Conan O'Brien, Liz. It's not you talking in your dining room.
I want to see the podcast where Conan O'Brien is in a closet with a bed sheet tacked like, to the wall to muffle sounds.
They have a gigantic table with like at least four people at the table and then like even more people around, right? It's like part of like a multi thing office where I think there's other recording studios for other people to make podcasts on like the same network, you know, like it's there's like cubicles and shit. I was like, oh, well, this is a little bit different. I record in what a realtor would refer to as a dining room. They would be mistaken. It's the podcasting room. But but yeah, sadly, I don't think we're going to get Harrison Ford as a guest. That's disappointing.
Damn.
Look, I'll put it out there. Harrison, come on the show.
What if
longtime fan
loved Unsolved Mysteries, and at this point all of the like 20 Unsolved Mysteries rewatch podcasts have all fizzled out except us
and we stand alone,
and his people are looking for something for him to do in his spare time now that he's not making Indiana Jones anymore.
I was gonna say I should have thought of this early, and I mean it never would have occurred to me and it never would have worked, but he's done a shocking amount of press for the new Indiana Jones movie, which is not like him. I'm sure that was part of the contract. So I was like, oh, that would have been the moment if we could have been like, hey, we're in the top 1% of podcasts, how do we get good old Harry Ford on here? And maybe I could have tricked some. I don't think so. That would have been my lifetime accomplishment, is that I scammed Harrison Ford
into coming on this podcast. It would absolutely be a lifetime accomplishment.
Also, if you ever watch an interview with him on like some late night show or something, pay attention to his hands and how much he rubs the chair that he's sitting in. Because he is high as fuck. Always. And once you see it, you cannot unsee it. God, I love that man. Okay. That has nothing to do with anything. We are talking about Unsolved Mysteries season... What are we on? Eight. Somehow?
Episode five?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Am I first?
You're first. And things remain a little wacky, I gotta say.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. Okay.
Not as wacky. This honestly, this episode could have been wackier, but
I could have used a ghost. This episode needed a ghost.
You know what? You're right. We haven't had a ghost in a while.
It's been a minute since a ghost. And as much as I loved the tea touch, and as much as I loved the miracle that's just staring at the sun, I could use a good haunting, but we don't get that this time. We start off with this real dud of a wanted. So it's in 1989, Oakland, California. The police received a tip and staked out a liquor store parking lot for suspected drug dealer Roberto Ramirez, who they heard was selling stuff there. I don't know. He was said to distribute cocaine from Oakland to LA. The cops want to make sure, you know, this is a really bad dude, and they accuse him of using his own children to transport the cocaine in their school bags. Look, I don't know, whatever. So Detective Clint has a mustache.
Clint.
It's a cop name, right?
It's a little bit of a lip curtain.
It is. I called it call a cab, but but you're really at this point, because this is like what, like 95 or something, the only mustaches you're regularly gonna see, sadly, yep, anymore are cops.
It's gonna be on cops. Maybe we'll get a firefighter mustache.
That's true.
I think being one of those.
I think Roberto had a mustache. I couldn't decide if he counted as a dirtbag or not. I don't, whatever. I don't. I guess he does kill someone. It's fine. He's a dirtbag. Okay.
The way you said that. I guess he is a murderer.
I guess he is a murderer. Well, I you know, whatever. I wasn't too concerned about the drug dealing, but
Well, that's just being an entrepreneur.
Yes. But once you step it up to murder, then I'm like, okay, fine. All right. We also have, I think there's two cops named Mark in this segment. Don't appreciate that. But we have an officer, Mark Burrell, has a mustache that I called Why the Long Stash. Because it gets long and almost like cowboy-like, like kind of wispy.
Is that the lip curtain? I remember there was a lip curtain in this first segment. Now I'm not remembering there being two mustaches.
Yeah,
there's it's not important. It's really not.
There's another one. There's also Detective Mark Smith. Basically, every cop had a mustache.
Okay. So. There's too many Marks, there's too many cops, and there's too many mustaches in this first one.
No, that's just a statement about life.
Well, yes, this first segment reflects life.
There's too many cops and there's too many mustaches.
And there's too many Marks.
Mark Smith, this is a music joke, so Samantha's gonna ignore this, but his mustache is called The Fall.
Okay.
Because whatever, it doesn't matter why. So they got a search warrant for Roberto's house in Fairfield, California. 12 police officers worked together on the raid. The cops went up to the door and Ramirez appeared at a side window and opened fire. This is when he commits murder. Two officers were hit, including Detective Smith, who was bleeding profusely and needed to be evacuated. Reinforcements showed up from 8 other police departments, which is a lot. So now 30 armed officers were surrounding his house. At this point, I think Roberto realized that he wasn't getting out of it. So there was a 2-hour standoff.
30 cops deep. No, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah, like there's nothing you could do at this point. So after a 2-hour standoff, he finally emerged. He apparently came out behind his visibly pregnant wife and 2 children. So that is a real dirtbag move. He like used them as a human shield.
Yes, he used his pregnant wife as a human shield. So dirtbag behavior.
That's real shitty. He was arrested on 2 counts of attempted murder and then an assortment of other drug and assault charges. But his bail bond was posted for $500,000 and he was released. Guess what? He didn't stick around. In June of 1990, shortly before the court date, he went on the run with his wife and children. Mark Burrell, who was one of the officers who was shot, he was shot through in the left arm, and he tells us that he still has no feeling in that arm. Like, he can move it, but he doesn't have any sensation, so that does suck. And Mark Smith says he can't pronounce most of the things that were damaged when he was shot in the stomach.
One of the funniest, this man cannot pronounce stomach.
Yeah, he can't pronounce stomach. Well, he's a cop, Samantha. Actually, neither of these people died. Maybe he didn't commit murder.
How maybe do you pronounce small intestine? What is this?
Kidney? Yeah, his intestines, kidney, and liver were damaged. I guess there's probably other stuff in there, but I'm not sure what he was.
He's not he doesn't have those fancy medical degrees. Yeah, Liz. He can't.
Not everybody's heard of a kidney. Spleen. Not everybody knows what an intestine is. Check your privilege.
It's so easy to pronounce the internal organs that I couldn't even like come up with a fake mispronunciation of intestine.
It's intestone. You try to say it like Italian or something. Intestione. I don't know.
Look, learn how to say your internal organs in elementary school.
Like first grade, I feel like. Maybe not, but. Look,
okay. I was watching the Magic School Bus.
Yeah,
being able to pronounce the everything on the elementary canal. Okay,
but the Magic School Bus taught me that the blood in your veins before it hits oxygen is blue, and that's not true. So thanks for nothing, Magic School Bus.
Wow, Miss Frizzle should be on trial.
She should, but mostly for being so fashionable and for not being friends with me. So where are you, Miss Frizzle? Love the looks. Love the lizard. Love your whole deal. All I can think about is this vine that's just a little clip of the Magic School Bus when they go into space and one kid like loses his helmet and then someone goes, oh, he's dead. Like they bring him back on the bus and in the show he's fine, but skeptical.
How that works.
Okay, so there was no update for Roberto, and I didn't look it up, and I don't really care.
Did he get away?
I think he might have, let's look it up. He might have gotten away. And I'm not even sure he's a murderer now. Didn't beg this one. Yeah, he probably just left the country. The thing is, with these drug dealer cases, if someone posts bail, they just leave the country and then
good luck getting them.
Right. So, no, he's still wanted. In 2006, the couple's daughter came forward and agreed to be interviewed. She told them that her father had died in Mexico. However, that has not been proven, and the couple are still considered fugitives.
Hmm. All right.
So, I don't know. Roberto, if you're out there,
tuck in your bushes.
Quit using your wife as a human shield, okay? That's rude.
Yeah. I can't believe she stayed with him.
Maybe it was her idea.
She needs more higher standards.
She was like, Roberto, I know how to get out of this. And she put a big pillow under her shirt. And then she came out and she was like, oh, I'm so pregnant. Because the thing is, when you take that cop to be a test, you take a test to become a cop. And if you score too high, like IQ-wise, they don't let you be a cop. So
this explains why he couldn't pronounce stalemate.
Think something to think about. You could be too smart to be a cop. Not great. Okay.
Great. Well, we skipped. So there's like an update in this one. It's like a, I don't know. They've been doing these updates where they like send a correspondent to go like, we don't care. We're not going to talk about it.
And they sort of recut the things we've already talked about, like mixed in with an update. And I think maybe there's sometimes a tiny bit of new information, but not really. It's really just there.
It's not enough for us to be able to talk about
it. They just repackaged an unnecessary update to make it look necessary, but I'm not fooled.
This woman in her power suit needed something to do, so they sent her to go check on these people.
Do you think that her and Robert Stack were having an affair?
I hope so. Write that fan fiction for the zine.
From the correspondence desk.
Not too spicy, just remember.
Yeah, no, please, no.
All right, so I got a last love.
Fates with these requests. Yes, the fates worked out. You get the last love this time.
It's not like the greatest last love, though.
It's kind of not. It's kind of sad, but
it's still, yeah, but it's still a last love, and I'll take it. So we are looking for the siblings of Tina Sheets. So Tina Sheets of Toledo, Ohio, is searching for her two brothers, whom she was separated from after their 26-year-old mother, Patricia. I can't pronounce her last name. It's probably
it's intestina. It's kidney. No.
Anyway, their mother Patricia was killed in a car accident in 1963.
That was so stupid.
Kidney.
Oh my god.
Mac like, and I recorded 3 episodes this week. We're running out of the humor is running a little dry. You just gotta understand. We're
very lowbrow. Mac and I, like, seriously, 20 years ago, were behind a woman in line who corrected her friend's pronunciation of the brand Burberry. Her friend had said it like Burberry, you know, she was like, actually it's Burberry. It's just like, sorry, but it really bugs me when people say it wrong. And we, 20 years later, still say that because that woman was so obnoxious. It's actually Burberry. Oh my God.
Where is that woman now?
Yeah.
Somewhere being annoying, probably.
So hopefully she learned the error of her ways, but...
All right, so when this car accident happened that killed Tina and her brother's mother, Patricia, she had lost control of her car while driving to her aunt's house where her 3 children were waiting for her. And it's really sad. Tina talks about, like, waiting for her mom to come pick them up. Ugh. And then they saw it showed on the news.
Yeah.
Yeah, they realized that it was Patricia's car, but she said that they were kind of too young to really understand how serious the situation was. But I'm sure they could, like, understand, like, the adult's reaction. Yeah. So that's horrifying. That's horrible. Tina's 2 brothers, 1-year-old Craig and 2-year-old Christopher, were soon sent to foster care and later adopted by another family. She was placed in the custody of her maternal grandparents. At first, she believed that she had done something wrong to cause Patricia, Craig, and Christopher to be taken away from her, which is really sad. But as she got older, she hoped to find Christopher. The nicknames that these 2 boys had were Chipper and Chrissy. So I just wrote down that they were trying to find Chipper and Chrissy.
That sounds like companions to Barbie dolls, like Midge and Patsy, Chipper.
You just have Barbie on the brain is the problem.
No, that's 100% here. And also, like, all of my social media feeds at this point are just Barbie. Did you know the Barbie movie is coming out?
That's probably the same for all of us. How do we feel about anything that's just pink being called Barbie core? Because that's what I've been seeing.
It's a stretch. As someone that was buying pink previously, and I can only assume will continue to buy lots of pink in the future, it's just something being pink.
Does not make it Barbie core. I asked because I saw a TikTok of some woman who owns a nail salon who was saying, like, these are the Barbie core nails for your, like, Barbie night inspiration. And it was just a bunch of pink manicures.
Okay.
I mean, I guess maybe if you're trying to make them Barbie, but, like, nothing, like, they weren't, like, it wasn't anything that screamed Barbie, just a bunch of pink manicures, and we're calling them Barbie core just because they're pink. I don't know. It was a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. It's not enough.
I don't think it's enough.
Put a heart on there or something. Or, like, I don't have something that kind of retro about it, or some sparkle at least. I don't know. Yeah. That's not enough.
Yeah.
I'm not just impressed.
Being pink, I'm not sure, is Barbie. But, I mean, at all the pink. I mean, I welcome all the pink for sure. So we're looking for Chipper and Chrissy. When Tina was 16, she began searching for her brothers. Her great aunt gave her the address where they were sent after the accident. And when she went there, she found that they had moved. But she did find their foster mother, who remembered them fondly and called them her babies.
Aww. This woman,
she didn't know where they were.
Loved those kids, man.
Yes. And they had, like, she didn't keep them forever. They, like, moved on to a different placement. So she didn't know where they were, but she remembered absolutely loving them.
When she had all this stuff, she had all these photos of them. She had, like, these little bow ties that they wore for some picture or something. Like, she had kept these mementos. It wasn't like they had just come and gone in her life. Like, clearly it was an important part of her life to her.
Yeah, and I think she gave one of the bow ties to Tina, just like, and she wasn't planning on letting Tina keep it, but Tina was so, like, happy to have this piece of her brother that she was like, oh, you can keep it. You can keep it.
She's like, I guess I'll part with that. Yeah. No, so, but anyway, so cute.
Yeah, that was Doris, and she is interviewed for Unsolved Mysteries. So after, they lived with Doris for 2 years, and then were adopted by a family in Michigan.
Okay.
But she had photos and videos, which Tina cherished getting to see, because, you know, they were separated when her brothers were very young, like toddlers. Yeah. Unfortunately, Doris didn't know anything about the family that adopted the boys.
I'm sure she's not really supposed to, you know?
No, I don't think so. And also, like, even if she did know something about them from years before,
right, it would be out of date.
Maybe they didn't even live in Michigan anymore. I mean, it's not like they could look them up on Facebook. So Tina asked sketch artist Lois Gibson to create age progressions of her brothers to show how they would look today. And she is now hoping that Unsolved Mysteries will help her be reunited with them. So this case is solved. And I pulled up the Unsolved Wiki. Bless the Unsolved Wiki. So on the night of the broadcast, Craig and Christopher's aunt called the telecenter. She contacted their biological father, who also called the telecenter. Just minutes later, Tina talked to Craig on the phone for the first time in decades.
Aww.
She soon talked to Christopher, who said that he still had memories of his sister. A few weeks later, they were reunited at Craig's home in West Virginia. They also celebrated Christmas together for the first time in 22 years. Christopher later moved to Houston, Texas to be closer to Tina.
So was it Unsolved Mysteries that brought them back together?
Yeah.
That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah. So their aunt and their biological father both called the telecenter on the night of the broadcast.
I love that. And but what happened to Chrissy?
They're both in there. So Craig and Christopher were their names. Oh, okay. And they were both reunited. And there's actually a picture on Unsolved Mysteries Wiki. I don't think there was a picture on the episode, but when I googled it, there was a few different news articles about this story, and there is a photo of them being reunited.
Amazing. Love
the brothers. Look, were they twins? They look exactly alike.
They did look very similar. I don't know if that's just like old time haircuts or, yeah, I don't know. They did look very similar.
Yeah. So yeah, they were all three reunited.
Okay. Now I have This is just called Legends. I think we used to be calling them Mysterious Legends, and now the segment has evolved.
Just Legends.
Legends. Okay. And Robert Stack tells us that 150 years ago, the buffalo ruled the Western Plains. 39 million strong, proud masters of a vast, uncharted land. But today, the Great Plains are virtually empty. Just, and this is at the time of recording this, just 130,000 of these majestic creatures remain. Which is not by accident. That was intentional as part of a genocide. But moving on. Most buffaloes, I think they're technically bison. I feel like someone's going to write in and be like, actually, American buffaloes are bison. But
oh, God. Is buffalo like... you keep talking, I'll Google it.
Okay, but in this segment they keep saying buffalo, so I'm just gonna stick with buffalo. Most buffalo today live on ranches, such as the one featured in this segment in Janesfield, Wisconsin. We see Dave Heider and his wife Valerie, who've been breeding buffalo since 1989. But the events of August 20th, 1994 were unusual. Dave got up and went to go check on a pregnant cow, only to find that she had already given birth. And at first, the calf was in the shade and he couldn't get a good look. But then it walked into the sunlight and he realized that the calf was pure white. And apparently this is extremely rare, and the odds of a white non-albino buffalo calf are 1 in 10 million. The calf was immediately named Miracle. Words of Miracle got out, and Heider quickly heard from members of the Lakota Sioux Nation. To the Lakotas, a miracle appeared to be the fulfillment of an ancient prophecy. So almost overnight, their farm became something of a religious shrine. And people from all over the world came to see Miracle. They told us that during 1 5-hour period, 2,300 people came to their farm.
Wow.
In 5 hours. Because people were so excited to see Miracle. So we learn a bit about this legend. It had been handed down by the Lakota Sioux for some 600 years. We hear from Avril Looking Horse of the, let me see here, Cheyenne River Reservation, who is a spiritual leader for the Lakota Nation. And according to him, the legend that he's been is responsible for passing down to the next generation goes like this. Two scouts were once sent out during a great famine to search for a buffalo herd, and they came upon a white buffalo calf. And as they were watching the calf, it transformed into a beautiful maiden. 4 days later, this woman came to the entire tribe. She brought a sacred pipe and a code of laws that Robert Stack compares to essentially the Ten Commandments of the Lakota people. I have no idea if that's accurate. And she promised that she would return in 600 years as a white buffalo calf to usher in a period of peace and harmony. This story has been passed down for 19 generations. And the 1600 years lines up with the birth of Miracle. So Avril tells us that the maiden said that she would come back when the cherries were deep red, which is essentially the last week of August. And that's also when Miracle was born. So that fits into the prophecy, too. Now we hear from Floyd Looks, who is a medicine man. And he tells us that the white calf will show is here to show us about natural disaster and man-made disaster. Mm-hmm. And he believes that this is going to guess what he thinks. None of this sounds true. By the way. Great fires, floods, earthquakes, typhoons, man-made disasters, pollution, and war.
He really had me at this point, but then he says that it's only supposed to last for 3 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was kind of like, oh, I'm sorry to tell you.
Yeah, I think that he might have been slightly optimistic about how long the period of turmoil was going to last.
I was really like, wow, this is very true.
That all happened. You are correct. But then after that onslaught wanes, we're supposed to have an unprecedented time of harmony and world peace. And that the birth of Miracle is supposed to be a sign of hope. That once we get through that, the bad times, which I would say are right now, that supposedly things are going to get better. Huh. Many people offered to buy Miracle, including Ted Turner and Ted Nugent. Apparently just rich guys named Ted. But she was not for sale. Dave saw
Ted Nugent swoops in.
Oh my god.
Fucking purchase.
He probably would have like kicked her out in some field somewhere and like hunted her down. You know what I mean? Like,
he probably would have started a sideshow attraction and charged these people money to come see her. Whereas what, this man is just letting 3,000 people just come to his farm.
Come to his house. Like, it's kind of wild if you think about it. How are all these people parking? Like, they must be
going to the bathroom.
They must be walking for miles. Yeah, but fortunately, Dave saw how important the calf was to people, and he believed he had essentially a sacred duty to take care of the calf, and he was not looking to profit off of it. So, seems like a really good dude. They also
know Ted Nugent.
Yeah, you don't get to like buy this rare calf and then like cut it up for steaks or whatever weird thing you were planning to do. Unsolved Mysteries also wants us to know that Christians have been moved by the miracle calf and that people come leaving offerings on the fence. There was the story of this woman who brought her baby to be baptized by Miracle, and Miracle like came over and stuck her head through the fence while the baby was being baptized, and then when it was done, went away. Okay, like somehow Miracle knew.
When you said baptized by Miracle, I was picturing Miracle with her little hooves holding the baby and dipping it into...
I could only assume that's what the woman wanted, but then was confronted by the fact that this is a buffalo and not a cartoon. But no, the buffalo was present for the baptism of her baby, which is, I'm not a religious person.
I wish I was that baby.
Exactly.
And I could tell people that I was baptized next to a white buffalo.
A miracle buffalo. My mom drove through the night to get to this ranch with thousands of other people that had been baptized by a miracle buffalo. It's amazing. Apparently, Miracle has already fulfilled, at the time of this filming, one part of the prophecy, which is changing colors four times. That the calf is supposed to start white, turn to black, then red, and is now yellow. So they showed us four buffalo calves, and they look basically the same. One is kind of lighter, which they were calling yellow. I don't know about that. But it was a slightly different color than the other buffaloes. Mm-hmm. And that one was Miracle. So it doesn't stay pure white.
And this wasn't like an albino calf either.
No, that's part of what made it so rare.
Yeah.
So the update was that Miracle gave birth to four calves before dying of natural causes at 10 years old. The Hyder farm was blessed with a second Miracle buffalo 2 years later. Even though
was
he was
Miracle's baby, because I couldn't like understand if Miracle gave birth to another white calf. Oh,
they were supposedly unrelated, just lived at the same farm.
Wow.
And they named that calf Miracle's Second Chance. Now I was like, okay, what happened to Miracle's Second Chance, right? Well, unfortunately, Miracle's Second Chance died after a couple of days.
Oh man.
But then they had a third white buffalo.
Wow.
Which, what are the odds? Okay, so NBC News has a story called Wisconsin Farm Has Third Rare White Buffalo. A farm in Wisconsin is quickly becoming hallowed ground again for American Indians with the birth of its third white buffalo, an animal considered sacred by many tribes for its potential to bring good fortune and peace.
I wonder why they're having so many white calves in this farm. It's wild.
Yeah, they asked about that. Dave asked about that too, where he, well, okay, so he says that he saw that they had another white buffalo and he went, I took one look at it and I can't repeat what I thought, but I thought, here we go again, which is, which clearly means he went, oh fuck, because he's gonna have thousands of people like
coming
to his house. But he clearly like takes this seriously. Like he is, I don't know. From the segment, it seems like he's showing a lot of respect to the fact that this is important to people.
Yeah.
And he's not like, yeah, he's not just like trying to turn it into a sideshow attraction or whatever. He said, we never even thought about having another white one until we got this one. There has to be some reason we keep getting these white calves, but they don't know what it is. Huh. So Miracle Second Chance died after 3 days, unfortunately. I'm not sure what happens to this
Miracle's Third Chance.
I'm also not seeing that. I wanted the name, but I'm not seeing the name of this third white buffalo. The odds of having a white buffalo are at least one in millions. So,
oh, wow.
And as the number of buffalo decrease, it's becoming rarer and rarer, obviously. But what is the name of this one? I don't know. I guess
well, while you're googling that, I will tell you that it is not buffalo with bison. They're completely different animals.
Oh, okay.
The the one that lives in America is the American bison. It is not a buffalo.
No. Oh.
And no one exactly knows why people started mixing up the two terms, but it's believed that early European settlers confused the American bison with African and Asian water buffalo.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Okay. So maybe was I supposed to be calling this a bison the whole time? Are there not bisons in the U.S.? Are there buffaloes?
They're completely different animals. I don't believe there's a native buffalo in the Americas, but in the United States. It's the American bison.
So I should have been saying bison, but no one does.
For the record, but no one's going to correct us because our listeners are great.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like unlike some other segments we've had about Native American or Indigenous people, this one was trying to be respectful. I think that it did a pretty good job of...
Okay, most segments we get would not even have a Native American person speaking. It would be some white person explaining to us what the legend is. So I think in that regard, it's already miles ahead of where we've been before, because we actually heard from them.
We heard from two different people about the legend and what it... Like, we heard from one person about the legend and one person about what that prophesizes for the future. So I don't have any, background expertise on this, but I would say that, and I feel like it's not presented judgmentally. It's sort of like, here is miracle. This is like obviously cool and rare. And then like, here's what it means to some people. And even people outside of that tradition are going like, wow, this must be like a cool sacred thing. I'm going to get my baby baptized or whatever.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a pretty cool segment. I liked it. And I think
it was much different than things we've seen before.
Yeah. Because sometimes you hear that heavy pan flute coming on Unsolved Mysteries.
You're like, oh, good.
Here we go again. But no, I thought I liked this. And it was good. I hope they named that third white buffalo Miracle Third Chance, but I can't find the name. So
we can only hope.
We can only hope. Yeah.
All right, we're going to do one that's kind of not that great, but it is short.
Okay, yeah. Right, this is very short.
This is a wanted. We're looking for David Gauss. So, David Gauss was a 31-year-old handyman hired to do repairs to an apartment building on New York's Upper East Side. In early 1992, a woman named Deidre, I believe that's not her real name, was the only tenant left in the building after it had been slated to be torn down and all the other tenants had left. So the building was in need of a lot of repairs and her landlord hired David to repair a leak in her ceiling.
Yeah, she's like the only person that stayed in this building because it's rent controlled. And she's like, wow, I'm not giving up this opportunity. But the building is like seen better days. I'm sure the landlord is not actually interested in repairing anything because he would prefer Deidre moved out. Because
well,
she's
he
the
seems
only
to
there.
Have one dude working on this whole place. So yeah, I'm not sure he's in much of a hurry.
I think he's doing like the absolute bare minimum, probably less than he's legally really required to do. And it's just hired this guy to fix stuff, which is he like qualified to fix stuff in any way, or is he just like a dude,
I mean, I don't know, but it doesn't seem like he's the most professional person.
Oh, no, he's a monster.
So yeah, after he fixed the ceiling, he was given more work and he began living temporarily in one of the basement apartments. So one night, Deidre smelled smoke and went down to the basement where she saw like a smoke-filled room, basically. And Gauss told her that he was trying to cook soup in a can, like over an open flame. So she obviously was worried that he was going to set the place
on fire.
Leave
that to the hobos. That is not for indoor life. You need to be, and by hobo, I mean you are riding the rails. You have a bindle.
You're using hobo signs?
You are using hobo signs. It is the 30s. It is not 1990 whatever. Yes.
Yeah, 1992, and you're heating soup over in a can. Presumably the can it came in over an open flame.
If you are taking a can of soup and putting it into a fire, then you also need to be leaving chalk drawings to let other hobos know which houses have the best pies.
Otherwise, and where cops live.
Yeah, which is amazing. By the way, look up the hobo sign for like there are cops around and just, maybe use that. Maybe that's helpful. No, this is, no. No.
So Deirdre was obviously worried that he was going to set the place on fire, because honestly, it seems like it was made of, the whole building was made of sticks. So she told him
it's like falling down around her.
She was like, next time you need to cook, just come up and borrow a pot. You just knock on my door. I don't care. I don't want you to burn the place down. She was being like exceedingly nice.
This is not her problem. That this like handyman is now allowed to squat in the basement apartment and is gonna maybe burn down her home
because he wants to make soup.
Yeah.
Oh my God. On March 29th, 1992, at around 9:30 a.m., Gauss arrived at Deirdre's door asking to borrow a frying pan. However, when she was like, yeah, just wait right here, he forced himself into her apartment, assaulted her, and raped her.
Yeah.
And then he so she said that his whole demeanor changed, and then suddenly as he was getting up to leave, he took an ice pick out of his pocket and kind of advanced towards her, and she was like, he's gonna fucking kill me. So she came up with the idea to convince him that he was now her boyfriend, and when he became confused,
this reenactment is should not be funny, but this guy trying to like act like, okay, so he's brutally raped this woman and now is going to murder her. And she's like, great, now we can be together. And his face is just like, huh?
What? It's like what she pulled out of her pocket was just like, I'm going to out crazy this man.
Yeah.
And it worked.
It was a last ditch effort. She was like, oh my God, I'm going to die in this building.
We're together now. You are my boyfriend. And he was like, wait, I'm sorry.
Yeah. She was like, now we can finally be together, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, he would like, couldn't catch up to the speed of like things were happening. He was like, wait, my plan was to murder you. We're dating. I can't kill my girl. I can't kill my girlfriend.
Yeah,
that wasn't part of the plan.
It's kind of brilliant. But then he claimed that he needed money to pay off a debt. And she was like, yeah, here's all my money. Please leave. And he does. So she called the police as soon as he was gone. At that point, by the time the police got there,
take this money, go pay off your debts, and then finally we can be together. And he's sort of like, okay. And then, of course, like the second he leaves, she locks the door and calls the cops. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Yeah, I mean, brilliant, Deirdre, honestly. As soon as the cops got there, he was obviously long gone. A background check done by the police, not on the guy who hired him, showed that he had a long list of arrests that included armed robbery, assault, and grand larceny.
See, this is the thing. Why was this guy hired to be making repairs in the building? I'm guessing because he was the cheapest. Instead of getting someone that actually, like, knew construction or some shit, you hired this dangerous person to be in a building with just one woman. It's terrifying.
It's horrible. And it's, I mean, they're like, well, just squat in the basement and just kind of like when you get to it, just like slowly work on things.
No, landlords. Oh yeah. My God.
So they also discovered that he was wanted for another rape in Nassau County. In that case, the victim was an acquaintance of his. Although he hadn't been seen in almost 3 years, authorities felt that Gauss has and would rape again.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no reason to think he wouldn't. So
I think the fitting death for this man is boiled to death in soup.
Okay, you only think that because our friend Jaina's go-to icebreaker is what soup would you drown in, which I think is brilliant, and I'm using it forever.
Exactly. That's exactly why I thought of it, but also that's what he deserves. Yeah, whatever type of soup he was trying to cook in that can,
that's what he's drowned in.
He doesn't get to choose.
Not like you and I, when we're doing our icebreaker, we get to choose what soup we would drown in. He doesn't get to choose. It's whatever was in. Probably chicken and stars. I'm not sure. But that's what he's drowning in.
I pick gazpacho. I think it'll be more pleasant to drown in a cold soup.
Well, yeah, because then you're not scolded to death on your way to drowning.
Yeah, and I like
honestly gazpacho, brilliant. So. I immediately said tomato only because it's my favorite soup. And then I was then Jaina was like, you don't need to just pick your favorite soup. You have to pick one that's pleasant to drown in. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't know if or less bad. I don't know if I think she said pleasant, but
I think tomato is not a bad choice. I would not want to drown to death in a chunky soup. That sounds
I was disgusting. Gonna say that. Like, I also love a potato soup, but the chunks of potato are not gonna be good.
I'm a big, you know, now living in Minnesota, I'm a huge chicken wild rice soup fan.
Wild rice in a bread bowl, there is nothing better.
But I do not want to drown in that soup.
No, it's grainy. That would not be good going into your lungs.
And thick. Yeah. My lungs getting filled up with that like creamy, fatty soup. No. Gazpacho.
Our listeners are disgusted right now. Okay.
Well, if they need an icebreaker question at work, now they have one.
What soup would you drown in?
Yeah.
It's going to intrigue and concern your coworkers, which is the best type of icebreaker.
That's all this podcast can offer, honestly.
All right. So fortunately, he was captured. David Gauss, who was at the time using the alias David Johnson, which is the fakest name I've ever heard.
Very fake. Though I have to say, everybody in Minnesota sort of has a fake sounding name.
There's a lot of Jensens, Johnsons.
Everybody has these like Scandinavian last names. And being from Chicago, I'm really used to people having Polish last names. So everybody being named like Anderson or Johnson, I'm kind of like, really? Is everyone here in the witness protection program? Where are the skis?
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. And his problem, maybe if he had come to Minnesota, he could have been more incognito, but he was arrested in 1996 in North Carolina.
Oh, yeah. No. He should have come here.
He was arrested as the result of viewer tips from a rebroadcast of this segment.
Woo! Yep. Love it.
He was returned to New York and convicted of 7 charges, including rape, sodomy, and was sentenced to 40 years in prison. This says he was eligible for parole in 2019. I don't know if he got out of prison or not.
I hope he drowned to death in soup. I hate him.
No less than what he deserves.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, we have one last segment. This is a kind of interesting one, I think. This is an unexplained death. So in the 1950s, millions watched actor George Reeves play Superman on TV. And I'm not sure if this is the origin of that, like, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's Superman. I don't know if that was in the comics first, but it's definitely like what popularized that representation of Superman. So then in June 16th, 1959, at about 1:30 in the morning, the Los Angeles Police Department arrived at his Hollywood Hills home. They found George sprawled across his bed, dead from a single gunshot wound to his right temple. It was quickly ruled a suicide. Yet people just as quickly began to question that decision, and the controversy supposedly continues, even though I've never heard about it before. Many people believe the actor actually met with foul play. So back in 1952, George Reeves became a star overnight with his role as Superman. Just 4 years earlier, he had been installing septic tanks for a living, so it was a big break for him. His steady girlfriend was Toni Mannix. This is so glamorous. A former Ziegfeld showgirl.
Amazing.
However, she was married to Eddie Mannix, former vice president of MGM and a powerful Hollywood player. However, scandalous at the time, he did not care about their affair and actually encouraged it. Why is anyone's guess? Maybe they had an open marriage. Maybe he just really didn't care. But apparently he thought it was great that she was sleeping with Superman. But George and Tony broke up in 1958. And he started seeing Lenore Lemon, a member of the New York Cafe Society. I have no idea what that is, honestly. She had a bad reputation and was known for getting into fights. I mean, these women sound incredible. I'll date them too. Okay, so so while he enjoyed his time with Lenore, it did not afford him the same lavish lifestyle he'd enjoyed with Tony, because obviously Eddie, as this former MGM head, was very rich, and they were just like playing with his money, and he apparently thought it was great. So it was a bit of a downgrade, at least spending wise, to be with Lenore. And it had also been a couple years since he had last filmed an episode of Superman, and he was having trouble finding new work. So at the night of his death, there was a small party, and then only Lenore and a writer named Robert Gordon remained in the house. When two neighbors stopped by, hoping to have a drink, and George was rude to them, telling them that the bar was closed. Essentially feeling like they were mooches, you know. And this embarrassed Lenore. I'm sure she had told them they could come over any time or something, and he was being a cad and whatever. So they seemed to have a little argument, and that makes people speculate that maybe she shot him.
There's a little thin as far as evidence.
Yeah. The one thing that I do think is suspicious about this is that there was half an hour after the gun was fired before the police were called. So obviously that makes people think, did they need time to come up with a consistent story? Blah, blah, blah. But I'm going to say these people had a party. Maybe they had drugs.
That's kind of what I was going to say.
And they wanted to get rid of them before the cops came.
Yeah.
That I think is probably more likely, but you know, I wasn't there. Everyone said that Reeves was alone in his bedroom and that he had shot himself. The things that people point to say that that is not true is, One, there was no fingerprints on the gun. Also, the bullet passed through his skull into the ceiling above his bed, which causes some people to question the trajectory of the gun and like how he was holding it. Okay. Also strange is that the shell casing was found under his body. There is no powder burns on his head or hands, which is why some people say that he didn't pull the trigger and maybe it was Lenore. Then we hear a much stranger theory that only one guy seems to believe, and I didn't even write down his name, but he thought that Eddie Mannix was tired of his wife being like, oh, I miss George, and so went and killed him. What? Why? Yeah, that makes no sense. But then we hear from an expert that sort of explains away all of these things that people find suspicious. He says that the shot wouldn't have necessarily caused powder burns to the head because it was not... It was like right against his temple. There wasn't any distance.
Okay.
He also said that a well-oiled gun, like George was a gun collector. He kept guns sort of for show. So they probably would have been well-oiled. And that means that they don't hold fingerprints.
Oh, interesting.
Because essentially, like... Your finger oils are what leaves your fingerprints. And if they're touching oil, then there's nothing to leave that mark behind, right?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I never would have thought of that, but...
Sure. It's like too slick, right? So that makes sense. He also suggests that if the gun is held upside down, which he even shows like how it would be more comfortable to hold it to your temple, holding it upside down instead of right side up. That means that that type of gun would have ejected the shell casing behind him. So that if he was holding it upside down when he held it to his temple and then pulled the trigger, the shell casing would have fallen behind him before his body fell back on top of it.
Okay, that makes sense.
And honestly, everything he said, I was like, actually, this makes a lot of sense. Like, I can sort of understand why people were suspicious because of that half an hour. But I honestly think that people are not always ready to have cops come to their home.
Yeah.
So I think that maybe that might have more to do with it. Or maybe, like, there was someone there that needed to leave before the cops came. Or, you know, like, there could be other reasons why they delayed.
I don't know that 30 minutes is that long.
It's really not. Like, I mean,
what if you were just really upset?
Like, okay, so they hear the gunshot. They run upstairs. They're like, oh, my God, George is dead. Like, maybe they try to revive him. Maybe there's, like, chaos. They're probably drunk. Like...
It's not like it was 5 hours or the next day or like,
yeah,
30 minutes. I don't know. I mean, is it maybe longer than you would expect, I guess, but it's not so long that I'm immediately suspicious.
Yeah.
Given that there's a lot of other evidence.
I'm also going to say, and this is just like my total speculation, but at the 50s, it's like hard to place an immediate phone call. Like you're talking to like an operator, like there needs to be an open line. Sure. Like maybe they called and it was busy. Maybe it took a while to get put through. I don't know. It's not quite as immediate as we would think a phone call would be, you know?
Yeah.
Cause someone has to like literally connect a wire at that switching station thing. I don't know. So that guy sort of explained all of the suspicious stuff away as far as I'm concerned. That was biographer Jim Beaver. That's really his name. Right.
Thanks, and Jim.
I called his stash Super Stash.
Super Stash.
Okay, we also hear from his... So then people are like, but why would he want to commit suicide? And it's like, well, his bills were stacking up. He was in debt.
There's not always a reason. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And also we hear from his co-star who played Jimmy Olsen on Superman. And he says he doesn't know for sure what was happening with George. But they essentially both ended up so typecast from their roles. Like, everybody knew him as Superman. Everybody knew this guy as Jimmy Olsen. That, like, nobody wanted to cast them as anything else. So he didn't have, like, good prospects for work. And he, like, had all this debt.
Also, I realize people think they know famous people, but like you don't. You don't know how he's feeling. You don't know what's going on with him in his life, in his head. Who knows? You know?
Also, I think we know now that suicidal thoughts are extremely intense, but they're also very fleeting. So just because he felt like killing himself in that moment doesn't mean he did like that earlier that day or whatever. So we'll never really know. But I don't actually think that it's suspicious personally. Okay, that is the end of the episode.
Should we rate it?
We have to by law.
Mysteriousness.
It's not extra.
That mysterious of an episode, I gotta say.
The most mysterious thing to me is why does this one farm keep having white calves?
Okay, that is mysterious.
But I'm guessing there's just something in the like genetics of the the bison that are there.
I'm guessing they probably have like a couple studs, and so maybe they just keep passing down recessive genes or something.
Yeah, but it's still cool.
It's very cool.
That's like the closest to get to mysterious, but honestly, I'm going to say thumbs down for mysterious.
Thumbs down for mysterious for me too. Reenactments?
I loved the reenactments in this. Mostly, I loved the segment I just talked about, because I loved the Hollywood Hails Home. I loved the, like, I don't know, decor of being like, he's on the rocks with his party lifestyle. I mean, I love that. I love that Valley of the Dolls type shit. So
it was good. It was good.
So thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Costume
fashion, yeah, fashion.
Same because of that last segment.
It was good. Who was the woman in the vest? There was a woman in a vest. I can see it in my brain, but I cannot remember which segment she was in.
Oh, I don't know.
It was like a very, very dated vest at this point, but very amazing.
It's amazing to me that in the 90s, I had like a small section of my closet just for vests, and like that's just not a that has never come back.
People loved a vest in the 90s, man.
Women wearing vests, somehow that has not, it has to come back eventually. If
Acid
Wash jeans have come back, if those like little tattooed choker necklaces have come back, it's gonna fucking
low rise jeans came back. I would think of vests. Vests are at least practical. You know, keeping your core warm, but your arms cool.
Nice and free for fighting.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this is a tentative thumbs up for fashion, but I think it's kind of as good as it's going to get at this point in the series.
I agree. And the mustaches can't carry it because they were all in Cops.
Except for Jim Beaver.
Except for Jim Beaver, the super mustache. But
yeah, a lot of Cops dashes. But I'm going to give it a hesitant thumbs up.
And Robert Stack, he's kind of outsourcing some of his work to his correspondents, so I'm not sure how I feel about him at this point.
He should have
a fine Stack episode.
It was fine. I liked him waxing poetic about the buffalo.
He should have gone and pet them. I realized bison are like kind of dangerous, but these are like,
it was a baby.
Kind of, this is a baby. He should have petted it.
He should have gone to pet that. He should have been with Miracle to talk about the segment.
He should have done some tea touch on Miracle.
Yes. I mean, we got that great shot from him seasons ago holding a golden retriever. I need him holding Miracle and doing the tea touch on Miracle.
Yeah. What happened to this show? Robert Stack is just too good for holding a buffalo now? A bison?
I think they've streamlined it a little bit so that maybe he has to do like less location shooting or whatever. And that's why we have the correspondence and such. And I'm sure it was like a lot less time for him. But that means he gets a thumbs down. Stack,
as he should.
Hold a buffalo. Hold
you
a bison.
Earn the thumbs up for us from us.
Hold a bison.
Yeah, I agree completely. So, how would we rate this episode? You know, to be honest, I thought I liked this episode, but then, like, after we talked about it, it was sort of only because of the bison.
I feel like the bison segment is so good, and I liked my last Hollywood.
Okay, thing. That one was good.
See, but
the
those
other
two
ones
are
a little bit short and like
kind of generic.
America's Most Wanted, kind of, other than The Lost Love, but we didn't get to see the reunion, so I can't really give it anything for The Lost Love.
I'm going to say 3.5.
I agree. It's a middle of the road overall.
Because, like, who cares about Roberto selling cocaine? It's just not an interesting story, right? Like,
well, he did murder someone, Liz, but yeah.
I don't think he did because both of those cops lived. So maybe he murdered someone at some other time, but I think I was wrong about that. Both of those cops talked to us. I mean, okay, he shot people. That's not great. But it's not. Okay, but
for some reason, when I was remembering that segment, I only remembered one cop being shot. See, I did not. It was so forgettable that I didn't even remember the very important details, which is like who died or didn't die.
But the morality of shooting a cop aside, it's just not a very interesting story. Guy sold cocaine. There was a shootout. Like, what do you do?
No, you're right. 3.5.
And unfortunately, I'm glad Unsolved Mysteries caught the rapist, but I do wish that he had drowned to death in soup.
Yeah, you're right.
That's a normal thing to say. Look, I hope everyone's abusers drown in soup. The world would be a better place. Though soup would be kind of tainted.
You're right.
God, this episode is
Or would it really elevate soup?
We would have like festivals to celebrate the soup that killed everyone that was bad.
I love how this episode has gone to a weird place, as they often do.
Very weird place. Thank you to friend of the pod, Jaina, who I'm sure is not listening, for this for this icebreaker. It will break the ice, for better or worse. That ice will be broken.
It will be melted in the soup.
Exactly. You'll try to chill down that gazpacho, but those ice cubes are going away. Okay. Now we are to the found loves segment.
Found loves. Do you have a found love? Because I'm not sure. I feel like I should have one because I'm not going to have a found love opportunity again for another 2 months. But
I have the one for you to say.
Oh,
no. Fantastic. I have your found love, which is Jury Duty.
I mean, I loved Jury Duty. It was fantastic. You recently watched it.
Yes.
So it's been a while since I watched it, but I thought it was hilarious. And if you haven't watched it, or if you don't know, Jury Duty is this show on a streaming service called Freevee, but you can also watch it on Amazon. And it's the whole thing is they stage a trial, and
an entire trial,
and it's a civil trial that they stage, and every single person involved is an actor except one dude who's on the jury duty, and it follows like the whole trial from start to finish, and it is so hilarious.
It's so funny, and I cannot like the level of commitment to pull this off is incredible. And also actor James Marsden is there playing himself, because it's in Los Angeles and the idea is like he also had to go to jury duty.
To get jury duty. So funny. There was so briefly funny. When it first came out, like a lot of, I think, like viral marketing or like people like buzzing about it on TikTok and stuff, which is where I first saw it. So you may have seen like a clip where someone was like, I'm watching this hilarious show and James Marsden is there for some reason. Yeah, so funny. If you didn't, I mean, honestly, I might watch it again while I'm laid up for my back surgery, because it's very, very funny. Except the last time I had surgery, I watched something funny with Travis and I had to make him turn it off because I was laughing and it hurt. So you can maybe only this watch, isn't the right show.
You can only watch like Dateline. You can only watch like really serious
something
things.
Super sad. Yeah. So your impression of Jury Duty, having like more recently watched it?
I loved it. And Mac loved it too, and he doesn't like anything. So that really tells you. He was like, this is a great week for me. You found a new show that I like, and that never happens. And I got to watch new Indiana Jones. I was like, you're welcome, babe.
It was Max week.
It really was. The level of commitment to this that, like, you would never think. It's kind of how magic tricks work, is that essentially they're, like, so elaborate, your brain doesn't think anyone would go to that length of trouble. Right. So, and I also saw this explanation that like every time something really wacky happened where you'd be like, okay, he's got to figure out this is like a put on, that they would do like 6 hours of boring shit afterwards so that he would be like, well, okay, this must be a trial because we're just like doing paperwork, or they're just like, you know, like they're just doing normal fucking boring jury duty shit.
Yeah, obviously for the show all the funny stuff is condensed, but in real life
there would be
just sitting in a room just waiting for like 4 hours.
James Marsden's like napping in a corner and he's just like making small talk with the other people he thinks have jury duty. They're actually all actors. And I just, this guy is just like such a sweetheart and is so nice to everybody. Like, not like he knows it's being filmed, but he thinks it's for a documentary. He doesn't realize it's this like reality show premise. And yeah, it's just adorable and lovely and so funny. I had such a good time watching it.
I wish I could watch it again for the first time. Travis and I really like immediately wanted them to do like a season two, but are sort of like, I don't know how you would do that.
Yeah, you'd have to somehow come up with a different scenario, I think.
Yeah.
Because now people who go to jury duty in Los Angeles are going to be like kind of suspicious. Which I wonder if that's going to start like this whole thing where people are like, oh, and it's like, no, this is actually a real trial. You need to stop that.
Yeah, stop doing some wacky shit because you're not being filmed right now.
James Marsden is not here. This is actually just a real trial and 3 people are dead. Please be serious. So that was a great recommendation. So I thank you for that found love.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah.
I'm responsible for it for sure.
Exactly. You're basically a producer of that show. I realized that I never talked about, I don't think I did. See, the thing is, people, I cannot express this enough that we say things on the podcast and then we do not remember them. But I don't think I ever talked about my favorite play. A as a found love.
I don't think you did.
I think I talked about it at a book club, but I don't think I talked about it here. So a couple years ago, I discovered this play by Noel Coward called Design for Living, which is from the 30s. And there is a recorded performance on Spotify by LA Theater Works that I have listened to at this point at least 10 times, maybe more than that. And the premise is it's essentially, despite being from the 30s, this throuple, which is a woman and her two love interests, who are a playwright and a painter, who are also both kind of in love with each other. And it's just the, like, it's kind of a play, just like comedy of the situation. It's very, very funny to me, but it also is kind of meaningful. It's really well written. I've only experienced this performance of it, but it's done really, really well. The reason that I found it is that Hamish Linklater from Midnight Mass plays one of the love interests.
Oh, okay.
And even just listening to the audio of it, like, it's so fucking funny. I don't know. I couldn't say enough good things about it. I mean, I've listened to it like 10 times. I can't get enough of it. I think it's so, so funny.
Amazing. And I do think I remember you talking about this in the book club, but not on the podcast. So I'm glad you reminded me of it.
Because I think this was like a year or so ago that I stumbled upon this. And like, I was like looking for something to fall asleep to and then ended up staying up to listen to the whole play because I was like, I love this. Like, what is this? I love this so much. And it just is like, I guess because of the themes that were considered like pretty shocking at the time, it seems like surprisingly modern. And it's not the sort of thing I would usually seek out at all, but I love it. And I've also read it, which is fun, but I would definitely recommend listening to it performed and over just reading it because of just the timing for the, it just makes the jokes a lot funnier. So, yeah. And that's just free on Spotify. So, and even if you don't pay for Spotify, I don't know if everybody knows this, but you can still listen to stuff like that with, you just have ads. So you don't necessarily have to pay for Spotify to listen.
Amazing.
So that would be my recommendation. It's Design for Living. It's by Noel Coward.
That's a really good recommendation.
That's something you can, that'll kill a whole like hour and a half while you're recovering. You can listen to that. You're welcome. Okay, we are going to start our hiatus now.
Right.
Usually we don't know our hiatuses are coming. So I feel kind of sad that we're actually like...
It does feel a little bit sad, actually.
Now we'll be gone. Though, when I don't have to take notes on Unsolved Mysteries, I'm sure I'll be very happy, but...
I mean, it will be like a vacation for you.
It'll be a vacation for me having to sit through some sad episode of Unsolved Mysteries and be like, oh my god, who are these people's names? What? What am I going to mispronounce this time?
Well, I think we forgot to plug on our last episode, so we should do it now since we won't be back for a while. You should definitely head over to Patreon. If you aren't currently a subscriber of Patreon, if you give us a dollar, you will get over 60 episodes of brand new content. So that should definitely get you through our hiatus.
Yes, yes. There's stuff we have never released otherwise on there. We will
most
be
most of it.
Yeah, most we've of
never
it.
Released. So look, you could go hear us talk about Canada's Worst Handyman, my favorite TV show.
Yes, and we did an episode of Hotel Hell.
We did. We did Hotel Hell. We did every episode of The Low Files.
Yes, which, oh my god, bring back The Low Files, you cowards! Oh, I have a couple. Okay, I can only think of one right now. But in terms of recommendation updates, that show Warrior is back.
Oh,
that I love. That was another thing that made Max week great, is that Warrior is back, which is on HBO Max or whatever the fuck they call it now, which is the show that like Bruce Lee had originally pitched that everyone passed on at the time, because it's about Chinese immigrants to San Francisco turn of the century. So if you want to see people beat up racists, which I know you do because it is it is very fun, the third season is out now.
Amazing.
And they had to shut down for COVID, and I did not think they would be coming back because they have a lot of complicated crowd scenes for the, you know, it takes place in Chinatown.
Oh sure.
And they have like these gigantic street brawls and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, this is like, you cannot do any of this with like COVID procedure. That show is done for. But it came back and it's like it never left. So
amazing.
Blessings for that. That show is so good. I don't know why no one talks about it, but I love it.
Very cool.
I feel like there was something else I wanted to say for updates, but you know what? We'll come back with a bunch.
Yeah.
So yes, Patreon, send in stuff for the zine, perhaps do podcast@gmail.com. Also, apparently a bunch of you have ghost stories or like spooky stories you have not sent in. So send those in as well.
Please send them in. Eventually we will finish season 8 and we'll have to do a listener stories episode. So get on that. You've got 2 months.
Yeah. I'm talking to you specifically, Arden. I know you have a story. Send it in. Also,
busy.
Our history nerd, Rochelle, where's your story? Why haven't you sent that in? I know you got one. I know it. I'm calling you out specifically. Write it out. Send it in.
Get busy, everyone. And then while you're at it, head over to Facebook. We have a few Facebook groups.
Yes.
You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter. I don't really think... Are you on Twitter anymore?
I've abandoned
Twitter's
Twitter.
Dying.
Because it doesn't... it fucking doesn't work. And I was only seeing opinions from the absolute worst trash people on earth, so I can't handle it anymore. But if you want me to be on Threads, let me know. I'll try it. I can't promise anything, but if you want me to be there, I'll try it.
Okay. And then make sure you like this episode on Repod
so yes, you can
keep it on top of the charts.
So important. How else will Travis ever believe that people listen to this show? A thing he doesn't
exactly
believe.
Exactly. We're number one.
We're on number one on Repod. We're number one. We're number one on the Repod app. Exactly. Okay.
Is that all we have to plug? Are we just delaying the inevitable?
I think we are. Bye, everybody. We'll be back.
You can still find us on Facebook, particularly in our Facebook group. So.
Yes. And we will be back for Super Spooky Season, which is what's important anyway.
Spooky Season. We're planning even like the best spooky season yet, even though we know we're going to regret it.
Even though I promised Samantha last year that we wouldn't go as hard. And she was like, yeah, but now I have surgery and I have to make up for lost time. I was like, damn it. We're stepping it up exactly. Then.
Also, friend of the pod, Rochelle, brought it to my attention that there is a Friday the 13th in October this year.
Oh, hell yes.
So we're really going to just balls to the walls.
We are going to be so exhausted for winter. Perfect. Love it. All right. Thanks, everybody. All right, keep parking.
Keep parking. Bye.
Solve some mysteries, bitches.